It's time for Real Money with David Holland. Because David isn't just a radio personality, but also provides financial advice to clients, we must pause for a word from our compliance department.
David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, an investment advisory firm registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share common ownership under Holland Financial. The views and advice expressed by David Holland and guests are general in nature. No statements or opinions given during this radio program are to be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not to be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after a thorough analysis of an individual situation, and engagement of services to be offered are only in states where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. And now for the man who doesn't preach about cutting up credit cards, doesn't waste your time talking about which razor blades to buy, won't tell you to sell everything you own and buy gold, or ever use big words to impress you and talk over your head. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, David Holland.
And we are back. Welcome to the program. David Holland here. Glad to be with you. And we've got a jam-packed show today, so let's get right to it, Lisa.
The fastest 5 minutes in finance with Scott Connor.
Mr. Scott.
Hi,
how
David.
Are you?
Good, terrific.
You have a huge smile on your face, so the market was kind on Thursday.
I mean, it was a decent day. I'm not jumping out of my seat, but it's up, which
we
is
like
always
these
better than down.
Though, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was a nice, steady day. Dow up 113 points, closed at 13,204. NASDAQ up 21 at 3050. A little bit calmer day there on the NASDAQ than we've seen the last couple of days. S&P up 9. I'm going to say it closed at 1,400. The last number I saw was 1,399.92. I'm going to call it 1,400. Decent little jump on gold. A lot of technical buying pressure on gold. Traders are seeing the charts as oversold, so they're starting to get back into gold, it looks like. Gold up 16 at 1658, oil just about flat, and tens at 198 at the close.
Okay, well, that's nothing really earth-shattering there.
Yeah, nothing earth-shattering. It's just a handful of economic announcements and, of course, earnings. You know, I love earnings season. On the economic front, pending home sales up 4.1%. Now, pending home sales are, they're not closed deals. They're in their intention to close. So it's not, to me, it's not that big of a... not a very important number, but it does come from the National Association of Realtors, so it does give us a little bit of a gauge of activity. So that up 4.1%, highest level in almost 2 years, so that's pretty good. And, of course, on Thursday, we always get the new claims for unemployment benefits. Came in this week at 388,000, which is down 1,000. And you might say to yourself, well, that's odd, Scott, because I thought you said last week it was 385,000, and I did, but they revised it up, which they do every week, just so they could say, well, this week it's down. It's actually higher than the number I told you last Thursday, but later they kind of revised it.
I love this.
We're going to change this number. So today we get 388,000, which technically is down 1,000 from last week.
I was for the revision before I was against the revision.
Yeah, I mean, you know how I feel about the unemployment numbers. They're less than concrete. Let's say that. In earnings news, ExxonMobil was off on the day on Thursday. They missed their earnings expectation. A couple of big ones before the bell on Thursday. ExxonMobil and UPS both came out and missed their earnings announcement before the bell. So I was actually a little bit, not nervous, but I had some trepidation going into Thursday because futures in the morning were off. European markets were off pretty steadily. But we overcame those announcements.
Didn't we say that UPS was like a paired trade with Apple? Somebody shipping.
We had talked about FedEx.
Okay. Is it FedEx? Do they have the contract with Apple?
Yeah,
is that who it is?
They ship FedEx. Okay. FedEx, I don't know that I've seen their earnings announcement. They're probably upcoming. But, you know, some pressure on UPS, obviously, for fuel prices. So not such great news there. PepsiCo announced a smaller decline than expected, which is actually good news. So they got things sort of shifted back in the right way. Johnson & Johnson announced a big boost to their dividend to 61 cents from 57 cents. That's on the quarterly dividend. So that's a pretty
good
move.
Wow. So where's that? What kind of yield is that?
It's probably in the 3 range.
Okay.
Right,
so
in there somewhere.
Pretty good.
Yeah. So pretty good. And overall, that's about it for market day on Thursday. More earnings announcements. Amazon, Zynga, you know, some of the more obscure type of companies. And as you know, on Friday morning, we're looking forward with great anticipation to the first look at last quarter's GDP number.
The first look.
Yeah, so that'll be fun. Couple pieces of relatively interesting corporate news. You know, we talked about Groupon, which came out on the IPO in November of 2011, and how really we didn't know much of anything about how they were getting revenue, what their growth was like, if this CEO that they have, who's, I mean, a kid by most standards, was able to handle a multi-billion dollar company. Well, since Groupon launched in November of 2011, the stock is down about almost 60%.
Ouch.
They've had to go back, and remember we talked about how they had to revise some of their earnings announcements. That's kind of like saying, well, it was $389,000, but now it's $388,000. You can't really do that and expect investors to have any faith in you. And a very strange story Thursday. Apparently they do these weekly town hall meetings where employees can ask the CEO, you know, what's going on with the business? Are we doing okay and everything? And the CEO spent most of this particular meeting drinking beer and admonishing the employees about how the company has to grow up if they're really going to be taken seriously. So I don't know, very strange thing.
Maybe that's a new Zynga game they're going to come out with, drink beer with the CEO.
I don't know. That's Groupon, but they certainly
have
trouble.
Right. Oh, you're talking about Groupon. I thought you were talking about Zynga.
No, Zynga announcement later. Okay. Later today. That was Groupon that I was referring to there.
Well, maybe he got a good price on the beer then.
I don't know. They have trouble over there. And the last piece of corporate news I wanted to tell you about, Chesapeake Energy. Remember I told you about them earlier this week.
They got sued by the shareholder for the loans.
Yeah, they've got real problems. Credit got cut to double B from S&P. They have decided that they're going to revisit this CEO's ability to invest in the wells with the company. It looks like the shareholders are going to rise up and ask Mr. Aubrey McLendon to step down, which really is a shame because he's the founder of the company. But with some of these sort of shady dealings and this real gambler mentality, once you become a publicly traded company, you have to answer to shareholders.
The rules change, and if you think you're above the law, which we've seen with other folks, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah, so that's about it, and we'll look forward to more earnings on Friday come out throughout the day.
Very good, Scott. Well, speaking above the law, we are going to have a special guest on our program today. I'm going to introduce him after the break. Well, no, I won't. I'll do it now. Named Michael Oliveri. We're glad to have him on the program. Michael, how are you?
Very good. Thank you.
Good. Thanks for being with me. We're going to talk all about law stuff, especially about probate. What do you do if somebody dies? All kinds of stuff. I know we made a list. It's like 50 or 60 things we can talk about. So stay tuned. Jam-packed. Scott, go do those portfolios.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read. You'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
We're back. Ooh, the mic was hot and I was talking. You caught me, Lisa. No, it wasn't? Okay, well, I'm teasing because, you know, Michael, we have politicians that get caught talking on the mic when they're not supposed to be. But you're going to be intentionally talking on the mic, so that's a good thing. Michael Oliveri, super happy to have you on the program. And your local attorney, you've done this a long time.
I've been at this 15 years now.
Wow. And you don't look a day over
40-ish.
14 years of doing it. Well, your office is located in Ormond Beach. It's 55 Seton.
Seton Trail.
Seton Trail. Okay, Seton. And that's...
That's beachside.
Okay, very cool.
Yeah, it's an old building. We're really happy with it. It was a house converted into an office building, and we're been there a couple of years.
I'll tell you what, who's the smart one? You got a beachside house that you work with. I like that. And here I am in the stuffy office.
Well, I never get to actually see the water, so I'm not sure how smart that is.
Well... We talked before the show about there's so many things that we could talk about in the area of law, and I try very hard not to talk about legal stuff because I'm not an attorney and don't play one on TV, okay? But this is what you do every day, and so you're dealing with real issues for people who are facing end-of-life decisions, dealing with somebody that is incapacitated, you're dealing with probate, You're dealing with a lot of practical issues. And so the question, I think, that's a very practical one that would help our listeners is, what does somebody do when a loved one dies? What's the first step? What do you do to navigate the legal system? Because obviously there's a large legal process when this life ends and people, you know, they move on.
Well, I would tell people the first thing to do, I see quite often that people don't actually break out the will until after the funeral and after the burial. And a lot of old wills, I don't put them in mind, but a lot of old wills have burial instructions, whether they want to be cremated or buried in a certain spot. So people feel maybe it's not appropriate to look at a will before someone's in the ground, as if you're trying to grab for money.
Okay.
But it's a good idea from that perspective, unless you know the person's desires and wishes regarding burial. You might want to take a look and just make sure.
So sneak a peek at least at the burial instructions. Okay.
I've had situations where people were buried in the wrong place.
Oh my gosh!
And it creates a lot of difficulty. The family doesn't
know. I bet it does.
Quite what to do. So that's what I would tell them to do first. And then ultimately they're going to have to see a lawyer. Unless all of the bank accounts were joint, and the property, real property that might have been owned was joint, there may be probate. But first, let me back up and tell you what probate is. Probate is the process of having a judge prove a will to be valid. And in Florida, a will has to be signed by the testator, the person that's making the will. It has to be witnessed by two individuals. And although it's not necessary, it's good practice to have what we call a self-proving affidavit, where a notary will sign off saying the witnesses and the testator were in the room, signed together, yada, yada. Without that self-proving affidavit, if you ever have to admit that will to probate later, you have to actually find the witnesses and have them prove it up. So,
wow.
As people move,
that's not real practical.
It's not real practical. So the affidavit still saves you from that step. So I would have them go ahead and take a look at that and also understand the nature of the assets. Now, we have non-probate assets and probate assets. A non-probate asset is an asset that can pass by operation of law or contractually to someone else without having to go through the will.
Good old beneficiary designations.
Beneficiary designation on a brokerage account is a good example. Payable on death or transfer on death accounts at a bank. Joint tenancy with right of survivorship or tenancy by the entirety ownership of land passes outside of probate. But if someone passes away in the state of Florida owning a piece of property that can't pass otherwise by beneficiary designation or joint ownership, it has to go through probate. And probate is, like I said, the process of having the judge prove up the will. They appoint the executor, which is what most states call it. We call it the personal representative here in Florida. And that person is in charge of overseeing the process of probate administration. At that point, they file a petition to have the will admitted, themselves appointed. They have to find the beneficiaries. They marshal the assets. They collect all of the assets. We publish in the newspaper what we call a notice to creditors to try to find people that are owed money so they can file a claim against the estate. And once the creditors are cleared out and tax issues are resolved, the property gets distributed. Probate administration gets a bad rap in the state because it's costly and it's
time consuming. What makes it costly?
Well, the Florida statutes have some peculiar language that say that a deemed reasonable fee for an attorney is 3% of the estate, approximately 3%
of the
sliding
estate
scale. But there's also another 3% for the personal representative. So it's 6% off the top, plus the court costs. And the
court's costs aren't really an issue, though, are they?
It's about $400 to file a petition.
Okay, so depending on the size of the state, that might not be a big deal. It's more of this 3 and 3 potential 6% fee.
Correct.
But if people doing the work, I mean, is that...
I mean, there's a lot of work involved.
I mean, I'm sure that a lot of executors, personal representatives, more than earn their fee.
That's absolutely the case.
And I've heard stories, and I know you have, of people that have really... it's been a tremendous amount of work.
That's correct.
Okay, it is.
And I think that the court recognizes that. Now, when I say deemed reasonable, that means that ultimately the judge will have to make the decision.
Right.
And if no beneficiaries object, usually they just go along with it.
They go along with it.
Yeah.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we have Michael Oliveri, attorney at Caney and Oliveri. We'll talk a little bit more about your firm when we come back from the break. And his telephone number is 202-4046. That's the local number.
Correct.
And
or 675-0691.
Okay.
We've got two numbers. Either one will get to us.
Okay, very good. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back with Michael Oliveri. Stay tuned.
If you like what you hear, you'll love what you see. Watch Real Money with David Holland, the TV show, Mondays at 12:30 p.m. on West Channel 2. Are you gambling with too much money invested in the stock market? How can you tell? It's simple. The rule of 100. Take your age and subtract it from 100. The result is how much you might want to keep in the market. The rest should be off the table, invested in something safe. Every rule has an exception, but the rule of 100 is a good starting point to determine if your portfolio is out of balance. Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation.
I have with me Michael Oliveri, Caney and Oliveri. All right. Tell us about that. I know that you guys, you and is Jake Caney?
Jake Caney and John Caney.
All right, that's right. You've got both of them now.
That's
right.
Correct.
And all three of you were at Cobb Cole.
Right.
Okay. See, I know Cobb Cole from when it was Cobb Cole and Bell way back. So you and Jake came out, you started the firm, and then John joined you
later.
And
then John joined us last October.
Wonderful.
We've been at it 2 years now. 2 years, May 5th.
Well, those names, Oliveri and Caney, those are titans in the law area.
Well, I'm the only Oliveri in the law area. I come from a long line of accountants.
You do. Well, I know your dad, Bill Oliveri, and a lot of respect for you and your family. And so you made this move, and I know you've been happy with it because, you know, we talked before the show started how busy you are, and you're getting a lot of demand for your services. So that's a great sign, especially in this economy.
I agree. I can't be happier with the response of my clients to the move, and we've been able to service them the way we want. So,
and
I'm happy.
Would you consider yourself pretty much a full service law firm? And you guys do a lot of stuff.
We do a lot of everything in the civil area. We don't do any criminal defense.
Criminal. Okay,
but we pretty much can handle just about anything else. John Caney is the tax attorney, and so he can get into the more intricate details of estate planning for taxable estates.
He got his law degree back when they started the tax code, didn't he? Hopefully he
heard
that.
I won't tell him you said that.
Just kidding, John. No, he's been doing it a long time.
But Jake and I are a great team in that I'm more of a transactional type lawyer, and Jake is a litigator. And so even back when I was at Cobb Cole, whenever we run into litigation issues regarding estates and trusts, we were the tag team there. I would do
the
paperwork, and Jake would be the court.
So I think it's very interesting, Michael, is that you've seen what can go wrong when you don't get this stuff put together the right way. And, you know, a lot of people don't understand how big of a mess there can be if you don't have this, your legal work done properly.
That's absolutely the case. Although Office Depot sells a nice looking form.
Well, you beat me to it. I was going to say our listeners that listen to the program regularly know I'm not a big fan of do-it-yourself. You know, even with some of these like LegalZoom and some of these other, I just don't think you can take the place of judgment and experience with any type of self-help, be it a form or a website. I just don't think you can do it.
Well, and I'll give you some examples of why that won't work. I mean, execution is the big one. Almost nobody gets them executed properly. And if they do, if there's an improper execution, it will not stand up. But even if you get that correct, do you really quite understand what a will does? We spoke earlier about when you have assets and you pass away, they may be non-probate assets. So if you have a will that says everything in equal shares to my two children, and then you have a bank account and one child is on that bank account and the other one is not, well, guess what? That bank account goes to the one child, and the will says divide everything 50-50 otherwise. So the one child gets the bank account. Everything else is split 50-50. That's probably not your intention. Probably your intention was 50% to each.
But the legal system and the way this works is it's interpreted that you meant that the child gets the one thing and then split everything else 50-50.
That's absolutely the case.
And so that's the, I mean, unless you can call the person up, which we can't.
Well, we can, you know, sometimes there's a situation where the person's name was on the account, what we call for a convenience.
Right.
Which means they were just there to help mom and dad with the bills, but they weren't really supposed to get the money, even though their name is on the account. And sometimes we're able to claw the money back into the estate that way.
Well, you need their acquiescence to do that, right?
Well, it takes litigation usually. But
I've seen it actually where people said, yeah, that was actually the case, and you can put it back in and divide it up, but that's probably rare.
And it's expensive to do that. You don't want to go through that. So if you know your intentions, a lawyer can really help you. One of the bigger topics, though, we should be talking about is homestead, because the state of Florida has a plan for you, regardless of whether you want it or not. Most people don't understand that if you own a home in Florida and you reside there, you make it your residence, that Florida has a plan for where your property goes when you pass away. And that plan is this. If you die with a spouse, the spouse gets either a life estate in the property, or if they file a timely election after your death, they can take a half interest in the property. So if one spouse...
they have a choice.
They have a choice, okay. But they have to file an election within, I think it's 6 months.
I'll take the life estate.
Well, it depends upon how old you are.
Sure.
Sometimes the life estate, you know, or if you want to move,
right,
you may decide that you don't want to keep the home, and a life estate might not suit you. But that's something that a lot of people don't understand. They say, well, wait a minute. I had this asset before we were married. How come it just doesn't flow out through my will to my beneficiaries, my children from another marriage? It just does not. And I'll talk more about that in a second.
Yeah. Lisa's giving us, Michael's keeping me on track today. He sees Lisa flash the 5 second thing. He's like, I'm taking a break. thank you, Michael. We're with Michael Oliveri, Caney and Oliveri, and their telephone number is 675-0691. And he's just setting us straight on how this stuff works with probate and homestead, and more of that after the break. Stay tuned.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
All right. Talking about on the break, I was like, boy, there's so many things I'm going to ask you, Michael. All right, so I know you were thinking on the break about how this works with homestead property and all that. Minor children?
If you have a minor child, you may not devise the property to anyone other than minor child. The property is going to go to the minor child, period.
Period.
After the life estate interest of your spouse, that you're not free to devise
so
it.
So they get the remainder interest after the life estate, or they're 50-50 because of the spouse electing the 50%.
Correct.
Wow. So yeah. That's really the state saying this is the way it is.
It's really draconian. I mean, the state coming in and saying this is what you'll do with your property. Now, what do we get in exchange for that? We get a lot, actually. We get creditor protection, meaning if you die with $100,000 in medical bills, your children and your spouse take the property, and actually not only just your children and your spouse, but all of your heirs. They have to be lineal descendants, blood relatives, basically, are able to take your property free from creditor claims.
So just, you got another $100,000 in debt, doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
As long as it's not on
the house
property.
Passes to the family, and the creditors go away.
But debt on the property, though,
debt on the
is
property
different.
Still sticks. Yeah, okay. If it's a mortgage on the property or a workman's lien or something else you've allowed to attach, will still attach. But homestead property is a really big issue, and a lot of people don't understand it. And if you were to just, like we said, buy a will, a quick package over at Office Depot, you wouldn't understand the ins and outs of that.
Well,
if you go to a lawyer in town, they won't charge you much for a will, and it's probably worth your while just to understand these factors. It's true, the form itself is simple. You know, I can create a 5 or 10 page will without much effort.
Right.
But it's all of the experience that I give you regarding the assets and how they'll flow through to the children.
Well, I remember business school, and I took my law class, and it was business law, and it's the four corners of that contract. It was on that. What's on that? Even though it's one page, could mean the world of difference for somebody. So, yeah, I mean, having done this as long as I have, the financial side, I know how much I don't know about the law and what you guys do, practicing attorneys, and you just can't substitute that.
I do need to dispel one rumor, though,
okay.
Or myth.
All right.
A common myth, and I get this all the time, even to this day from clients, is if I die without a will, the state of Florida is going to get all my property.
Do you really get that a lot?
I get that a lot.
Okay.
And I tell them that's not the case. If you die without a will, you die what we call intestate. And that means that Florida has a plan for where your property is going to go. And there's a Florida statute that says exactly how the property is divided between your spouse and children or other.
So usually it's spouse, then children, then parents.
If you don't
siblings.
Have, yeah, it goes to parents, and then right. It goes to siblings, and it can go out to aunts and uncles and cousins, and it'll go further out on the family tree as you need to go until there's no one.
You end up with Brewster's Millions. You ever see that movie?
Yes. But no one's that fortunate that they have an Uncle Rupert, I think.
$300 million. Yeah.
Well, he had to spend $3 million to...
Yeah, spend $30 million 30 days to get the $300 million.
I just taped it
the other night and watched it. I love that movie. It's one of my short lists.
Well, and so he got the New York Yankees to play his baseball team. That's
not a bad deal.
But you really need to have that, your ducks in a row there. If you die of intestacy, all is not lost. Your family will still get the property. Maybe not as you would want, but it'll still go to your family.
Well, it's so important to make sure you got these things planned out. And that's why I always tell people that they need to talk with an attorney. And Caney and Oliveri, 675-0691. And you are right in Ormond Beach, beachside, and enjoying that nice ocean breeze. We're over here stuffy by the trails. But you've got the nice beachside. That's great. Anything else, Michael, that's really a key thing that you want to share with our listeners?
We were talking about probate and non-probate assets. Another way that you can have your assets pass outside of probate is with a revocable trust or living trust, sometimes they're referred to. And that's it's an important tool. It'll allow you to avoid the probate process entirely.
But still some fees, though, right?
Yeah, still some fees. Usually not as much. It's not as much for a lawyer to do. There's all the statute filing.
And I don't know the statutes by number like you do, but isn't it something like 75% of the probate fee is what they can charge for trust administration?
That's the old code. You used to say that, yeah.
600-something, I know.
No, it's just his reasonable fee, I believe.
Okay.
So,
here's a question I've been meaning to ask an attorney, so I don't mean to pop a quiz on you. And does a person have a choice? Let's say that they're the personal rep under the will, and the parent or spouse dies. Even if an attorney has prepared the will, they don't have to use that attorney, do they?
That's a great question. And a long time ago, the lawyers used to write themselves into the will as the attorney for the estate. No, absolutely, that's not the case. We have the personal representative has full discretion to choose whichever attorney they like.
So even if
a lawyer is holding the will in their vault, they can't force you to use it.
Give it to me.
You just go and pick up the will and say, "I want my other lawyer to handle this. Thank you for holding the document," and or please deposit the document with the clerk of court.
That was going to be my question, because there's this urban myth that the attorney jumps in their car and runs down to the courthouse and files it somehow, and that locks them into being the attorney.
Not at all. You can hire whomever you like. You can fire them if you don't like them.
Hear that, ladies and gentlemen? You can fire an attorney if you. Well, you know what it is? Is that I was thinking about. I went for my morning bike ride, and I was on A1A, and I was just deep in thought, and I said, "Well, how much control do people have about these decisions?" And because I was thinking to myself, a lot of people don't realize that they can do that. They're intimidated because it's what they don't know. You know, you and I obviously deal with financial and legal issues all the time. I'm reading what you guys are writing, the trust. I'm reading them, but
and one thing I do need to add quickly, especially if you have a probate estate, if you know that somebody died and they had assets in their name and you know that the will is going to be probated, ask the lawyer how they're going to charge you.
Very good.
Now, we said earlier that, there's a presumptive reasonable fee in the statutes, but that doesn't mean they have to charge you that.
That's not a required amount. That's the maximum.
Not. Well, it's not the maximum. It's what the court would deem reasonable.
Okay.
And unless there are extenuating circumstances one way or the other, they would either give them more or less.
Right.
And there are a lot of different services a lawyer can provide that would be in addition to that.
So the key thing is to ask what they're going to
charge.
Ask
what they're going to charge.
Get it in writing?
Get it in writing.
Okay.
They should give you an engagement letter with the details of how they're going to charge you. And sometimes they just charge you by the hour. Now, for smaller estates, it almost always benefits the customer to be charged by the hour,
right,
versus by statutory rate. But it varies from case to case. And you know, if I have 87 beneficiaries,
oh my gosh,
it's going to be an awful lot of work for my
office.
You're going
to be doing it by the hour or figuring something out that's reasonable, not only for the client, but for you.
Right.
Michael, I know that we're almost out of time, and so let me give you the shout out again. Caney and Oliveri, right here in Ormond Beach, 675-0691. We're going to have you come back on. We only got to like two or three things on our long list.
So. I'd love to anytime.
Yeah, well, thank you being on.
Let me know.
All right.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.
You load 16 ton, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.